I'm going to start with the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all of my old ideas so I can live on your spiritual truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for having mercy on me, a sinner. Help me to carry your message tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we are bottom of page 84. And we've entered the world of the Spirit. We're in step 10. And I talked about the significance of entering this world where God is the director and I'm not. Anybody think that's a good place to be? And I talked about how the ninth step promises that are read at a lot of meetings are really, I think, the spiritual experience promises, the promises that come true when I'm in right relationship with God. And it says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. They just appear. So if you do the work, you enter this world where you, God is your director, you have trust in relationship with God, and these promises just appear. Now, you can lose the promises if you lose your relationship with God. And we talked about quickly or slowly depends upon how long it takes to work the steps and get to step 10. And I think it's important, at least for me, to keep working the steps all the time the rest of my life. And we're going to read why on page 85. And the more I live in step 10, which is in the now with God, the better my days in life goes. And we're going to see why. And I'm going to go over this paragraph again, but not over 30 minutes like I did last meeting. This thought that they will materialize if we work for them. Everybody see where we are on page 84? It says, which suggests I continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So I'm going to inventory my personality, my thinking, all the time. And I want to set right any new mistakes in my thinking, because it's my thinking that causes my actions. And when my thinking is separated from God into self, then I have negative actions that harm myself and others. And I'm in conflict with everybody and everything. Anybody ever live like that? We all did. And the new mistakes, I used to think it makes you just, you say you're sorry all the time, or I'm sorry I did this. You know, I believe it's mistakes in my thinking. And it is mistakes in my action as a result of my thinking that I want to correct. And then they give us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 10 lines that tell us how I live every day with God. Isn't that amazing? It says, we vigorously commence this way of living in the world of the Spirit as we cleaned up the past. So as you're cleaning up the past and you've done the work, doing the work at steps 1 through 9, and you commence this way of living, and you clean up the past, you enter this world. Now, when does that occur? It's different for every person. And it's when you suddenly realize that God is doing for you what you could not do for yourself. When you suddenly realize that you're changing your thinking, that you intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle you. That when these things are coming true. And it says, I've entered the world of the Spirit. Now, when I came to AA, I was in the world that I created. Anybody else do that? I was the center of the world. And I had a script for everybody. I was in conflict with everybody and everything, and I had fear and resentment and shame and guilt. Does that ring any bells? And I didn't realize that there really was another world and that I was separated from it, because I thought, you know, this is the way it should be. But the world of the Spirit is where God's the director. I work for Him. He gives me everything I need if I stay close to Him and do His work well. So it says, this is not an overnight matter, the world of the Spirit. I'm going to grow in understanding and effectiveness in this world. Understand my role in it and be effective at carrying out God's will. It says this is not an overnight matter. It continues for a lifetime. So I do the work. I come in. I do the works in steps 1 through 7, 8, 9. I begin to make my amends, provided I've discussed them with my sponsor and I don't do more harm. I have tools now because I know how to be free of fear. I know the prayer for fear and why I have fear, because I'm managing that area of my life. I have tools to be free for anger, right? If I get anger, disturbed, I realize the person is perhaps spiritually sick, just like me, and they're the four prayers that I say, and then I forgive and move on. And it says, I continue to watch for this selfishness, dishonesty, resentful, and fear, because that's the thinking that's killing me, right? That's my self-centeredness. So now I'm in this new world where I never lived before, where God is with me. He's with me, and I'm watching with him. And when I'm watching with him, when these things crop up, when they just begin to step into the picture, I ask God at once to remove them. I don't wait. So I start getting afraid. I say, God, please, just remove my fear. I start getting selfish or upset. I say, God, remove my selfishness. And it's almost automatic because I don't want to be disturbed anymore. Anybody else like being disturbed? No, I don't want to be disturbed. That's the name of the game, really, in AA, is how to be undisturbed, how to go through the day and be at peace with God and accept the things you can't change and change the things you can. You know, and stop practicing my self-centered character defects and practice his. It says, we discuss it with someone immediately. So that's where you need someone to call 911. I'm upset at the office manager again. She's totally unreasonable. He says, no, she's not. Just change your mind, forgive her, move on. Don't waste any more time, Michael. And Alan laughs, so he'll discuss that afterwards. And make amends quickly if we've harmed someone. So we discuss and we make amends quickly because we don't want to carry any of this around. And it says, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Turn myself away from me to someone I can help, anyone. And it could just be whoever else is in the room. If you're at work, who else can I, if it was at work, if things were going crazy, say, okay, who's the next patient I can help? What can I do next? Because I want to turn my thoughts away from me. And then it says, love and tolerance of others is our code of living. And I got these initials, WADAT, from this paragraph. We watch with God. We ask him at once to, when these crop up, to remove them. We discuss these things immediately. We make amends quickly. And then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And then love of tolerance of others is my code of living. Now, I practiced intolerance and impatience when I came here. That was my code of living. And now I want to have love and tolerance. We drove all the way to Manhattan to look at some place today to find a place for mother-in-law. And the guy told Patty, yeah, he's got a place. And we drove up there. And then he said, now, I don't have my notes here. And he got his notepad. And she says, well, do you get blah, 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 blah? And he said, oh, no. She says, well, then why'd we come here? So anyway, I just said, well, that's the way it is. I got to have a nice hour with Patty in the car. Alan's laughing. Yeah. Well, it's okay as long as she drives. As long as she drives, we get along great. And so tolerance of others, and I see that differently as I used to. Tolerance is that no matter what happens, give me a shield of tolerance, God, between whatever happens and me getting upset by it. And I was great today, and I could tell Patty was getting a little anxious. I just held her hand. I said, okay, honey, it's all right, let's go. And people are who they are. And so now we're getting to what I call the recovery promises, the 10-step promise, the recovered promises. They say in the beginning of the first edition, the first paragraph, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. They had recovered. They're not in recovery. They're not recovering. They had recovered. And he says, And they say, precisely how we did this is the purpose of the book. And when you get to page 84 in this paragraph, you get the recovered promises. This is what it looks like. So I'm in the world of the spirit. I'm practicing love and tolerance. I've got these instructions on what to do every day. And it says, I have ceased, that means surrendered, fighting anything or anyone. Isn't that something? I don't have to be in conflict with everybody. I don't have to have my way. I don't have to be right. Dash, even alcohol. I'm not fighting alcohol. It's not in the picture anymore. Isn't that great? I don't have to think about it. I haven't thought about it until I just mentioned it now. For by this time, so I've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time, sanity will have returned. And what is the time? They don't tell you what time. Is it like 8:30 at night on Sunday? By this time in our recovery, having done the work, having reached this point, as we continue to do it every day, sanity, soundness of mind will have taken place, will have returned. It returns to me. And what sanity do I need to have that I get from God? Because I'm getting it from God because I'm in the world of spirit. I have to be able to see the truth about alcohol before I drink it. Did anybody quit and say they're not going to drink again and then take a drink? Anybody ever do that? No? Nobody ever did that in this room? Wow, this is quite a crowd. We did it all the time. And why? We swore we would never drink again. And then we're drinking that night. How'd that happen? Because remember, we could only see what alcohol was going to do for me, not to me. And it relieved my emotions. It relieved the way I felt at that time. It changed the way I felt, changed my perception reality. And I couldn't see the truth about it because I knew it was bad for me. What did Jim say in his story? He vaguely sensed he was a little smart. Not being any too smart when he took liquor with milk. You get it? He's in the bar and he's in getting a sandwich. This is in the chapter more about alcoholism. And Jim's an alcoholic and he goes to sell a car, right? In the country where there's a bar, get the picture, argued with his boss that day, didn't show up for work on Monday. And then he says, the milk was going good. He says, why don't I put some liquor in it? I'll put liquor in the milk and it'll be okay. And he vaguely sensed it was not being too smart. And then it says, they're off to another trip for the asylum was Jim. And that's just to show us the insanity of alcoholism. And I need to be able to see the truth of alcohol if I think about it today. Now, who gives me the power to see the truth? God. I never have it on my own. I don't have any power not to drink today. I've been sober a long time. But I have the power to seek the power of God who keeps me sober. Does this make sense? And so sanity is returned. So that's a promise. And it will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. Now, here's the key, if tempted. Now, where would I be tempted by a liquor? People aren't going to come out to my house and try to make me drink it, are they? No, it's in my mind, right? I say, oh, wouldn't the drink be good? And if tempted, I recoil as from a hot flame. Now, that goes back to the... And there is a solution. They say we have the problem centers in our mind, and we keep putting ourselves in the hot flame. We keep doing it, and we think it won't burn us. And so now we recoil from it. We can see what it is. It's a hot flame. I don't want alcohol. Recoil from it. We react sanely and normally. Sanely, because we're not powerless. We have God. And we act normally, and we find that this has happened automatically. You see why these are spiritual promises? We cease fighting everyone, everything. Sanity is returned. I'm seldom interested in liquor, but if I am, I'm tempted. God steps in, and I recoil from it, and I react sanely, and it happens automatically. Isn't that great? Everybody wants to know, how do you stop drinking? Well, you get to page 84 and 85, you do the work. You're in step 10. We find that we will see that our new attitude, you have a new attitude towards liquor, has been given us. It's not anything I can pass the test. It's just given to me without any thought or effort apart. It's just given to me by God. It's so powerful, these two pages that we're reading. My attitude towards liquor and the attitude towards my life, it just, it's changed. It's without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. That's a three-letter sentence, dude. That's a short one. It just comes. And I think there's an exclamation mark, right? So it's given to me, it comes, and that is the miracle of it. Remember, miracles are something God does. And it's a miracle that we're all sitting here sober tonight, isn't it? And we're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. And I don't have to be in conflict with alcohol anymore. Remember, we read it says you're not in conflict. So I don't have to fight it, and neither do I have to avoid it. In fact, I think I have beer in my refrigerator. I better check. We had it in December when the kids came over for Christmas. I haven't thought about it till now. Maybe I'll go home and drink. I doubt it. I don't think so. And it's a miracle. So I can't take credit for my years of sobriety. I did a lot of work and practiced the steps, but it's God. God who does the produces the miracle, but we have to take the action. It's a joint effort. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And that's in the world of the spirit. I'm in a position of neutrality, safe and protected from alcohol. What could be better than that? We have not even sworn off. Swearing off didn't help, did it? No. It sounded good at the time, didn't it? I remember I had this very complicated plan when I was going to quit. And then the day came, and I said, well, I don't have to do it today. I could do it in 2 days. And that made sense to me at the time, but it didn't. It was insane. And instead, the problem has been removed. Now, what is our problem? Does anybody remember? What does it say on page 45?
Lack of power.
That's my dilemma. I did not have a power to live. And now I have a power, God, and the problem has been removed. And on page 45, we'll go back and look. My book's falling apart. I think my book is about to die. But I just can't give it up. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Now, the dilemma is two choices, equally undesirable. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Still.
Obviously.
There you go.
I love that sentence.
But where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral, and it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. And here's the thing. It's going to tell me they have written a book which we believe to be spiritual, and it's going to tell me exactly what the book, how to find the power, right? So you find the power on page 85. So if you take your book and you go 45 to 85 and you hold it up, if you do everything in these 40 pages, the problem's just removed. And you have a power to live. And it works, doesn't it? People can talk about how it works. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we afraid. That is our experience. That's been our experience, and that is how I react. And here's the key thing, so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And notice it says, we're neither cocky nor are we afraid. I have freedom from fear now. which I never had before. And I have to stay in fit spiritual condition. If not, none of this comes true. And step 10 is to try to keep in fit spiritual condition during the day. And then on page 86, we inventory at night. That's how I stay in fit spiritual condition. At night, resolve the conflicts of the day, pray to God, answer those questions, so I can start the next day fresh, right? So I get rid of, don't carry over any of the debris from today into tomorrow. And so the whole deal is to stay in fit spiritual condition. And then they tell you why. Anybody know why? We're going to read it. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. It is easy, isn't it? I see it all the time. People come in, they're crying, their life is a mess, please help me, okay. And they come to meetings for a while and then they don't show up. I said, why didn't you come? Well, Big Bang was on and I didn't want to miss it. Or they start easing away and then before you know it, you don't see them again. How many times has that happened? In the time I've been here, I can't tell you how many people I've tried to work with. This is a very tough disease because our ego tells us we don't need it. And it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. So why do you keep doing the spiritual program of action? One, you feel better, right? These promises come true, right? You're not fighting alcohol or anybody or anything anymore. And you have peace of mind and serenity. And so you want to keep doing it. And the more you do it, the better your days go. And rest on our laurels, which is our achievement. And it says if you do that, if you let up on the spiritual program, now remember they tell you in How It Works, you have to go to any length, right? You have to give it everything. We're headed for trouble if we do. You're headed for trouble if you stop doing the deal. For alcohol is a subtle foe. What does that mean? Foe is mortal enemy. Alcohol is a subtle mortal enemy, and it's in a bottle. Isn't that ridiculous that I'm going to die because of a liquid in a bottle? But the liquid in the bottle is what I need to relieve my spiritual illness when I'm living self-centered, separated from God. And it says we're not cured of alcoholism. Sorry. What we really have, and this is a key line, is a daily reprieve. Now, reprieve is a legal term, stay of execution, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So I need to maintain this spiritual condition as best I can every day and not let up on it. If so, I'm going to drift out of the world of the spirit. I'm going to lose the power that God gives me to be in a position of neutrality from alcohol, and I'm going to drink. And I've seen that happen time and time again. Now, why do I do this every day? I wake up, I start with my prayers, because I know I need God, and I don't want to forget how bad it was when I hit complete surrender and defeat, and I gave up, and I asked God to help me years ago. And I want to keep that memory alive, so I keep doing it. My days have been pretty good, so I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to say my prayers tonight, thank God, inventory the day, and then I'll wake up and do it again. I think I'll finish this paragraph. Every day, now that doesn't say today or you might want to do this, right? Every day is a day when I must, this is a declaration, I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. And I wrote, I carry the vision of God's character into all my activities. And we have our spiritual checklist card. I gave one tonight to somebody new, and on the right-hand side is God's character. And that's the vision I want to carry into all my activities. I want to be loving, patient, kind, tolerant, considerate, compassionate. Now, if I bring that into all my activities, that's what I'm going to do. Now, if I bring hate and resentment and intolerance and impatience into it, how's the activity going to go? Not very good, you see? So it's really important that I try all the time in every activity. I heard the speaker say, the only thing lacking in every situation is the love I don't bring into it. And if I don't bring love into a situation, it's not going to go well. I have to love unconditionally. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. That's in quotes. How can I best serve you, God, not me? Your will, not mine, be done. Now, here's the key. John tried to make the point. This is when you get your mind back. It's on page 85. You can now use your brain. It says, these are thoughts which must go with us constantly. So my thoughts are constantly is carrying a vision of God's will in all of my activities. How do, can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And it says, now I can exercise my willpower as long as it's in accord, it's connected to God's will. All along this line, all I wish. So my willpower used to get me into trouble all the time because it was self-will, right? And it was not a really good power, was it? Ruined my life. And so now I have God's power, and I can exercise my thinking and my willpower along this line as long as I'm carrying God's vision in every activity. So in that activity, if I have God's will in my and vision for me in that activity, then I can use my mind. My mind has to be free of self-centeredness, or else I'm going to bring crap into it. And it says it's the proper use of the will. And I misused my will, didn't I? Anybody else? And I was in self-will. And I didn't think it was wrong because I didn't realize it. I had this delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life if I managed well. And I thought my motives were pretty good. Anybody else? But they weren't. They were all self-centered. So these two new paragraphs we covered tonight, there's so much in there. And we'll open it up and we'll talk about it. And then we'll pick up with, and probably review a little bit like I always do. And then we'll get into step 11. So thank you.